Hi, everybody. It's Jim Beekjai, and the podcast is Be You, The World Will Adjust. Well, I'm back in Terra Firma, Florida, after my son and I, Jack, had a spectacular trip to Dallas to see my daughter. And then we went for some plane spotting because those of you know that Jack is a massive aviation guy. I've been getting a lot of commentary and mail on my little R2-D2 story. And if you go to my LinkedIn page, you'll see the video of this little droid. And, you know, it's been really interesting because people have said to me, you know, maybe I can get one, you know, replace my spouse, my boyfriend, my girlfriend, my coworker, all kinds of things like that. And then people said to me, you know, can you imagine sort of extrapolate what that sort of means, right? Not just towels, but cocktails, food. I mean, it's never ending. Michael Jordan has a golf course down here in Florida, and he used to have drones fly out the food and drinks from the clubhouse until the local authorities said that they didn't want him to do it. But can you imagine sort of sitting there just teeing up at the 11th hole and you say, God, you know, I could really use a cocktail or I could use a beer, and you type it into your phone. And then, you know, by the time you're in the fairway, this thing shows up, you know, with your beer and everything else. I mean, I love this kind of stuff. I think it's fantastic. And it's changing the world so quickly and so dramatically. The worst part is that I can't see it all. I want to see it all. I want to absorb it all, but I can't see it all. And so the way I have to find out about it, let's go back to what I've said to all of you, is read, listen, watch, expand your minds, expand your repertoire of where you are. I mean, in our particular case, we wouldn't have done it if we hadn't gone to Los Angeles and stayed at the H. Hilton Hotel. And so if you're in Los Angeles, you want to be near the H. Hilton Hotel. Oh, and then I want to talk about something else. I don't know if I talked about this, how tiny, tiny the world is. So my son Jack has a Instagram page, and it's called YYZ_YTZ for Toronto Pearson and for Toronto Bishop Airport. And on it, he posts photographs of airplanes that he takes. And he's on the rooftop of the hotel. And like this hotel, if you can imagine, like we are 100 yards off the runway and we're listening to planes going, like the 12th floor, this beautiful deck top, and you can see all the planes taking off and everything else. And there's some kid up there who's maybe 16 or 17 years old. And if you're not an aviation freak like my son Jack is, you won't realize this is a big thing. Like, there are a lot of plane spotter people always at the airport, always taking pictures. There's a whole society. There's blogs. There's everything. Like, before we went to L.A., Jack checked out where the best place to see planes to land. It was right at the In-N-Out Burger. And they were right. It's like 500 feet above you as they're coming in. So anyways, I digress. So Jack and this kid start talking, and he says to Jack, where are you from? And Jack says, I'm from Toronto, but we're in Florida. And he says, where are you from? I'm from San Diego. So he says to Jack, you know, I see you're taking pictures. They always ask, what's your favorite plane? For Jack, it's the Dreamliner and the 777. And the kid says something else. So Jack says, do you have a blog or anything else? The kid says, yeah, here it is. So Jack tapes it down and takes it down. And so the kid says, well, do you have one? He said, yeah, I have an Instagram and I have LinkedIn. And he said, what is it? And he said, it's YYZYTZ. And my LinkedIn is Jack Beekjai Travels. The kid follows him on both. Here we are, thousands of miles away, in a random moment on a rooftop. And Jack almost didn't go up, but he does. And so when I say it's a small world, as a friend of mine says, it's a tiny, tiny, tiny world. It's not just small. You never know. So just keep out there. Just keep learning. Just stay on the toes of your feet. Just keep learning. It's the only way to get through this whole thing. So recently, following on in the McKinsey vein, they've been in the press a lot, unfortunately, for a lot of my good friends. But this thing came across, and I thought it was actually kind of interesting, so I wanted to talk about it a bit. It said a recent study that they research they'd highlighted in their McKinsey Quarterly showed that 75% of Americans say that their boss is the most stressful part of their workday. Further on, 56% of Americans claim that their boss is mildly or highly toxic. Then it goes on to say, few managers realize what a dramatic impact, either positive or negative, they have, and I would say because most of them don't care, on the world through everyday behavior. As I've always believed, that the relationship between a manager and employees have such a huge impact to not only the productivity of the employee and the accretiveness to the organization, but on the health of the employee and the organization. You know, a happy workforce, a productive workforce, people that feel valued will have a much better home life. They'll probably be better physically and mentally as well, as we sort of talk about mental health and seeing some horrific and terrible things happening in the United States. But I think people need to understand that when they're in management, employee satisfaction is one of the most determinants in an employee's well-being. And how can you have productivity improvement when employees don't feel that they're well cared for? So it reminded me of something that I had done years and years ago with my own management team when I was president at CIBC World Market. And I said to all of my managers, I said, there are 5 critical questions that we must think about when it comes to management. And the first one is, and so you should think about this as a manager, and then you should also think about this as the employee. The first question that everyone should have the answer to is, do I clearly understand what is and what is not expected of me in my job? Are my expectations and the organization's expectations consistent and clear? Secondly, do I understand the relationship between my compensation and the work that I do and the cause and the effect of the two? How do I get promoted? How do I make more money? Or how do I not lose my job? And how do I not get demoted? Do I actually understand that? And I would say that people probably don't really know how that direct relationship. The third one that I think is really important, and this is about how people feel about their organization. When people look around the room in an organization, is it clear to them why people get promoted and who gets promoted on merit? Or is there some ambiguity, you know? And then the second part of that is, when you look around the room with the people you work with, do you say to yourself, wow, I'm working with a really good, smart group of people in both their knowledge and their work ethic? Or do you work in a place where you go, I just can't believe that person still has their job? Like, I can't believe what they're doing. I can't believe that they're not very good at this. I can't believe that someone else has to do that. All of these factors. And then the last one, before I sort of talk about it in its entirety, do I believe that my boss has my best interest at heart in helping me perform better and improve the probability of my success? And it's a good acid test as an organization. If your employees answer yes to all 5 of those things, there's a high likelihood and probability that you have a high performing culture. But answering no to any of those, or I don't know, probably is a little dent in the armor about that place. Because every one of those pieces of the equation amount to creating a secure and a comfortable environment for people to perform at their best. And I learned this very early on in my management of people. And, you know, as those of you that know me, to me, nothing else matters. How you manage a workforce, how you manage an organization, the reinforcement, the reward for doing the right things, the cost for doing the wrong things, promoting people properly on merit, creating a system that is very clear and very transparent and that people understand. And I don't think people quite appreciate how much time in people's minds and hearts those five questions take. People sort of say, does anybody really know what I'm doing here? Like, you know, whether I knock it, whether I kill myself to do a better job, is it really going to make a difference? Or the other side of the coin, people going, listen, I'm not going to knock myself out here because like, there's just no point, right? There's no upside. I'm not going to be it. I'm not teacher's pet, or, you know, it's clear that that person is going to get promoted. And these five questions, and so I'm going to just repeat them again because they're really, really important. And you should ask yourself the question, how would my employees answer this question? So the first one is, again, do I clearly understand what is expected and what is not expected of me? Secondly, do I understand the relationship between how I get paid and the work that I do and the cause and effect between those two? And when I look around the room within the organization, is it clear to me how and why people get promoted? And is it merit-based? Fourth, do I work with people that impress me both in their knowledge and their work ethic? And this one to me is at the core of all of this is, do I truly believe that my boss has my best interest at heart in helping me perform better and improve my probability of success within that organization? If you can answer 5 out of 5 on all of those things, you're going to have a hell of a workforce and you're going to have a hell of a productive company. The reality is, I think most organizations, sadly, I would say, and if you go by that survey, if people think that 75% of the relationship with their, you know, bosses is dysfunctional, or what was the word I used? Most stressful part of their day. I mean, could you imagine that? That 75% of the people would say interacting with their bosses is the most stressful part of their day. And that, you know, half the people that their bosses are toxic or mildly toxic or seriously toxic. So then that begs the question, how to get people promoted into management roles? I've had plenty of examples, and I love these stories all the time, of people that I've worked with. And they said, you know, I never wanted to be a manager. You know, I sucked at being a manager, but I couldn't just be a subject matter expert, because if I was just a subject matter expert, not a manager, I would make less money. So organizations create this environment where they take people that are not qualified, not interested, or just incapable of managing people, and they put them in those roles. And why would the person say no? They're going to get more money, right? So they're going to get more money for doing a job poorly, because we don't pay you more money for doing a job really well that you're really good at. And so with many of the clients that I work with, this has been a big subject of mine about subject matter experts, right? You have to pay subject matter experts. You can't force them into positions where they're not utilizing their best skills. And I had a case not too long ago about an individual that was applying for this job. And I spent some time talking to him, and he was brilliant. He was really high IQ, but a true subject matter expert. And I said to the organization, like, there's no way in hell you should put him into management. Like, absolutely not, right? Unless you're going to say to them, here's a problem, fix it. You pick your team. You do everything on your own, which you're not going to do. But otherwise, the only reason he wants to go into management is because there's more money. He would be more happy to stay in what he's doing, get paid a little bit more, and he'll be even more productive to you. But organizations have difficulty making that shift, right? Because they have all these grade levels. You're grade 27, 52, 68. I don't even know what they all mean. But, you know, you can't get paid this if you're not this great. And in my sort of global pursuit of finding the one organization that is no longer going to use grade levels, is no longer going to use organizational charts as they have historically, and are going to think about their organization as a skill-based organization, matching skills to the jobs that are required, as opposed to putting people into jobs and then saying afterwards, well, you know, Katie, you're only half good because this other side that you suck at, you didn't do very well. And you sort of go, yeah, I told you that, you know, I sucked at it, but you told me I had to do it in order to get the job. So what am I supposed to say no and not get the job and then not get the money? So this constant sort of circular chasing of tails has to stop, and it has to stop, and it has to start with thinking about people differently. Thinking about our job in management is to make the people that report to us secure and comfortable in every aspect of their lives so they can perform at their highest talent. I mean, you wouldn't take an athlete and say to them, by the way, don't be going to the gym. And you know, that food that we set out on the table for you because it's really good for you, don't eat that. You'd be worried about all those things, right? Be worried about their exercise, their health. You'd be worried about what their food intake is, alcohol, tobacco, whatever, right? Well, in an organization, we should worry about the nourishing of the soul and the comfort of the people. And I've seen the value of this. I have seen the level of productivity. And I know that when I and a bunch of young bucks and buckesses ran the global fixed income business, I don't know if it's buckesses or what would it be, but let's just say buckesses, that, you know, we published a daily P&L so everybody in the department could see how much money we were making or losing. And we had a bonus pool and they could watch it go up and down. And we removed the things people are thinking about. We explained how we're going to evaluate people. It was very, very clear. The metrics were there. They knew if they did more of this, they'd make more. And if they did more of that, they'd make less. And it was remarkable how people responded to truth and transparency about what we expected of them, how we would evaluate them, and how we would pay them in the end. And so if you're running a business, my challenge for you this week is to ask your employees three questions. I actually ask them all five, but three you can ask if you only want to go to three. Do you understand what your job is and what we expect of you and to do and not to do? Do you have a clear understanding of how we pay you against the results of those jobs? And do you have full and utter confidence that I, as your manager, have your best interests at heart in improving your productivity and your probability of success? You know, the other two are just as important. Do I work with really good people? And can I understand how people get promoted and why they do and who does and how they do it? I think if you're willing to take that challenge, I'd sit down for a while because I think the results are going to blow you over. And if you're lucky enough to be one of those places, very few, that people respond positively to those questions, then I'd like to know what the name of your company is because I'd like to buy your stock because you're doing something really unique and something different and something extremely well. But for the rest of you, it's not a lost cause. You can begin to change your ways at any time or any place. So those are the five questions. Ask them of your employees and sit back and listen to what they have to say. Because at the end of the day, they are the foot soldiers of success for your organization. I'm Jim Bakiai. The podcast is Be You. The World Will Adjust. Thanks, everybody.